Hi there, and welcome to the Grief and Rebirth podcast. I'm your host, author, and trauma survivor, Irene Weinberg, here to encourage you wherever you are in your healing journey. In each episode, I chat with incredible grief and trauma specialists, healers, mediums, and celebs, as well as remarkable people who have inspiring healing stories to share. If you're looking for a podcast that's both uplifting and inspiring, you've found it. Let us help you find your joy in life.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am really happily speaking to you from West Orange, New Jersey, and my very special guest, Mitch Carmody, is coming to us from Prescott, Wisconsin. By the way, that's one of the perks of doing this podcast. I feel like I'm touring the country and the world with all the wonderful people that I'm talking with on your behalf. And by now, many of you may be familiar with Helping Parents Heal, the inspiring nonprofit organization that is dedicated to assisting bereaved parents by providing support and resources which aid in the healing process. I've interviewed quite a few people from Helping Parents Heal, and I've really been looking forward to interviewing Mitch Carmody. I was going to interview him last April at the Helping Parents Heal conference in Charleston, South Carolina, but sadly, of course, it was canceled due to the pandemic. He was going to be one of the uplifting and gifted presenters and healers at the conference because Mitch is a grief educator, a writer, an author, a grief nutritionist, and an intuit who has dedicated his life to helping individuals and families navigate the uncharted territory of death, dying, and the bereavement process. After suffering many familial losses from a young age, and ultimately the death of his 9-year-old son from cancer in 1987, Mitch struggled not only with the grief journey, but also with how grief is processed and perceived in this country. In 2002, he published a book called Letters to My Son, A Journey Through Grief, which has reached the bereaved in every state and 7 countries. And as a trained hospice volunteer, Mitch has also helped many loved ones and their families through the dying process. Mitch and I are about to have an inspiring, healing conversation about grief and much more. But first, please stay tuned while I take a quick minute to show some love to our sponsors. We'll be right back. Hey, Mitch, what a true pleasure to welcome you to Grief and Rebirth Podcast.
Hello, hello, Irene. Great to be here.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. I can't wait to share you with all our listeners. So let's start with this question. You say that dead is not gone. Please speak to this concept and the importance of recognizing continuing connections on the grief journey.
Well, I guess from the beginning when I had a lot of different losses in my life, and every time I had the loss, my father at 15, then my brother at 28, my sister at 29,
wow.
Then my son when I was 32, then my mother when I was 42. So I had all these different losses, but prior to my son's loss, my mother always told me, dead is dead, dead is gone, there's nothing there out there, it's over when it's over, and she said, just put behind you, buck up, so I learned to buck up and put my tears behind me when my dad died, because my mom said, that's it, she didn't even believe in God, so she didn't believe there was anything after death. And so I applied that to any grief that I had when my father died and when my brother died and then when my twin sister who was killed with her 2 sons in the car.
Oh my gosh, Mitch!
It was just. I mean, I could not grasp. And my twin sister, all she wanted to do was go see Jesus. So when she died, I remember being so conflicted with that because she was back in the day was the Jesus people and she was rah, rah, rah. And so she was all about the gospel. And so I was about Hindu and stuff. We were always debating, philosophy and whatnot. And
they were twins. And she was into one, that one, and you were in the other.
We were totally.
My grandsons are very different. Yeah.
You know, and I had actually heard through, I visited the Pine Bend Indian Reservation, long story, I won't go into it, but this Native American said that she was a twin too, but that when twins are, a boy-girl twin, she said, but when twins are born, one of them in Native American cultures, are they raised to go back to God, because this is a temporary thing, and they can't wait to get back, so the first one to get back wins type thing, and so... I know my sister is up there. She said, I know I'm going to be in Jesus' arm. And she won, you know, but she left a pair of boy-girl twins behind. We're 18 months old. And so I was very conflicted. How could she be happy with Jesus with her two sons, but yet she has a pair of twins at home that she was praying to have another set like her and I in our family. And she got her prayer because she wasn't even supposed to have children anymore. The doctor said, you're done having children. I know you got remarried, but no, you got scar tissue. You can't have children anymore. She goes, I got a direct connect with Jesus, and I want boy-girl twins, and I'm going to get them. By God,
oh,
she
wait.
And had boy-girl twins.
But she didn't live to raise them.
No, she had her husband. She got to raise them for 18 months, and then her husband got married right away. And so then he raised them, but... You know, then kind of wicked stepmother, and they were separated for a long, I mean.
Oh, my gosh. And what I'm thinking about is your mother with this stiff upper lip attitude, she lost her daughter, she lost her husband,
she lost her only sister, she lost her husband, and then she lost her father, and then my sons, and she's all these losses, and she did it the same way, like World War II. You get over it and you buck up.
Oh my goodness, she bottled it all up inside.
Oh, inside of her, yeah. You know, but it's interesting that I know I segue sometimes too, but with the, when she did die and my sisters were, or no, my her dog died. Her little Karma, and she called it Karma. I thought that was kind of funny, but she has a little Shih Tzu and it was a horrible little dog. We didn't like it at all, but it died. And oh, you thought the world was coming to an end. For 3 days, she cried. She never cried for one family member. She'll buck it up, you get over it. But she and my sisters were so mad at that. And I said, you know, that is her opportunity to grieve for all those losses that she didn't allow herself to because she's too strong. But yet, it's allowable to cry over your dog. So all that came out, and that was a revelation to me. And so that was the huge beginning of grief and putting behind you and do it like your mother. But when my son died, I said, I can't do this. I wrote him a letter and I said, Kelly, I need you to get back to me with a sign, you know, that you have survived death. I don't know. I want to join you so bad. So either you give me a sign or I'm going to come to see you. And I wrote these letters. That's called letters to my son. And he came and I moved to a brand new house because my son had died, a long story. I mean, we moved to Mexico. We sold everything we had because of his condition and trying to fight the cancer. When he died, we bought a house with a cul-de-sac and a trampoline for our six-year-old is now a single child. You know, so we wanted to draw kids in and we bought this house. And I said, Kelly, we bought this house for your sister. We're here now. Give me a sign of something growing in our yard and I'll know it's you. I need this validation to go forward. And oh my God, in spring, three corn stalks grew up in our backyard. Three corn stalks in the backyard. And I go, oh my God. So I quit mowing it and the city kind of yelled at me, but I had a wildlife natural habitat sign and I could let it go. And which is good because the three corn stalks grew tall and they were in a perfect triangle. And we had a healing in Mexico. And I just felt it pointed like it was a triangle, like an arrow. You're looking for anything that means something. And I said, these three corn stalks in the backyard pointing southwest. And I go, we were in Mexico for 3 months. He had a miracle healing in Mexico and God touched his hands. And he said, you know, all these wonderful things happened. So I said, this has got to be it. And then my daughter comes home a couple days later with a book from her fourth grade class or third grade class called The Three Corn Stalks, the Sacred Symbol of Mexico.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. What is, oh my God. No.
Talk about validation. I mean, that is synchronicity. That is
wow.
You know. So we said, oh my God, this is it. I got my son. I asked for something growing in my yard. I got three corn stalks validated by Mexico and my daughter. And so then the corn stalks died and they, you know, blah, 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 went, you know, through winter, came December 1st, his angel day in Minnesota, you know, snow's on the ground. The corn stalks are half under snow. And we're doing his yard site, you know, that first. And it was horrendous. I didn't think I could scream that loud a year later. It vibrated from my bones, you know, but the numbness was gone. And opening my heart up, my wife too, we just like, it was, then right during that point of screaming, a mourning dove came to our glass window and pecking at the door. So I opened it and I went out there. It flew over the corn stalk. And I go, what? So I went out there in my bathrobe and I pulled the corn stalk out of the ground. And there was an ear of corn on it about 6 inches long, tiny ear, but it was all moldy from being wet. Then I opened it up. The cob was rotted, but the rot had stained the back of the husk in black mold, capital D, capital A, D. And that's when I said, I've got to write a book. I've got to let people know that, I mean, I actually communicated with my son and asked him for a sign. And I get back a corn stalk that says dad on it. You know, it changed my life.
Of course it did. Of course it did. That reminds me of all the messages, you know, the ways that my husband came through it. It does absolutely change your life. So there's something else. So, okay. These continuing connections are so important. Could you also describe how you help to heal the brokenhearted by empowering them to recognize the power of their own intention and resilience in collaboration with both deceased loved ones and live influencers?
Yes, I think like I did with my son, was to reestablish a relationship and know that they are, like people call them, a guardian angels, inspiration, side by side, whatever you apply to that connection, which I think is a lot closer than we think. And my son's telling me it's like 360 miles away. So really, they're not that far away. So you feel that connection and you start establishing a new relationship and you're communicating in different ways. And some of it's just by recognizing the things that happen around you that they're guiding, they're helping, they're getting people to meet you at the same table at a restaurant or at a, whatever, these things start happening once you, you know, and you say, have gratitude for it and say, thank you. That the more of those things start coming in and you want to start doing other things for other people so they know, you know, what you're feeling, you know. And so I want to shine by example. You can't say, you got to do this, you got to do this. I want them to be intrigued, like, what about Mary? I'll have what she's having. You know, they want to know what works with you, and people start to question me. And I said, because I brought my son back like Lazarus. I started a new relationship and doing so many things, and that's when I wrote the book. And my grandchildren, you know, do I start proactive grieving? That my grandchildren know my Uncle Kelly. They call him Uncle Kelly. I mean, and they have a relationship with him. My granddaughter, that is 10 years old, was born on his 23rd angel day on December 1st.
Wow.
And this is when I first had a experience. I never went to a psychic before, but a psychic called me. And she said, Mitch, do you remember me from high school? That was 1973, you know? And this is, you know, I said, yeah, I remember your name. And she goes, well, my son died too. I'm writing a book. I want to publish it. But she goes, your son's coming to me right now. And I had to call you. She said, he's going to be coming back into your family. He wants to be born back into your family. You're going to be a grandpa again. Congratulations. And I go, I didn't know what to say. For the first time, I was actually speechless. And I go, thank you, Robin. I can't wait to call my daughter.
So
I called my daughter. I said, honey, I told her what happened. She goes, Dad, she's one of those crazy friends from high school or whatever. But she goes, I'm on the pill. My husband's out of a job. We lost a house during the NASDAQ crash. I said, we don't even have health insurance. We have a 3-year-old to take care of. We're not getting pregnant, Dad. I'm on the pill. I said, I'm just telling you what don't shoot the messenger. I'm just telling you what the lady said. 6 weeks later, she calls me, Dad, I've missed my period. I've taken 3 EPT tests and I'm pregnant.
Holy moly.
And the doctor said, your due date's November 16th. November 16th is my son's birthday. And I go, this is way out of the park.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
But then she went late and she was going to induce her. But then she went into labor on midnight, December 1st on his 23rd angel day. Same weight, same length, same blue eyes, same bleach blonde hair. I mean, anybody sees the two babies, I have a picture of them. And I go, you can't hardly tell them apart. And so she has always had this, identified. We didn't want to psychologically damage her for being, to say, call her Kelly or anything. But we I didn't want to go too far to ignore it either. So we just kind of played it. This is what happened. This is a fact, whatever. It's in Papa's book, you know? And so we talk about it. Then she started talking to him, you know, and she was hugging a tree one day and she's crying. She's 5 years old. I said, honey, what's wrong? She goes, I miss Uncle Kelly, but when I hug a tree, I can feel him talk to me. I said, what's he saying? She said, we have to call you Winnie the Pooh now. I go, why Winnie the Pooh? I don't know. I said, so we went and watched it. And it's about the Eeyore lost his tail and the whole Hundred Acre Wood is trying to fix his grief for losing his tail. There are five major characters in that story. Those are the five, big five in psychological terms of the way people operate in their system, whether you're an EFP or an INFJ or whatever. But I mean, so I applied it to that, put it into a workshop. I've done it at communication things at the hospital and talk about people. Are you an Eeyore? Are you a rabbit? Or are you an owl? And I give different definitions of all those, all from my granddaughter telling me Uncle Kelly said. And we were at a candlelighting, and she said, during the candlelighting song, she closed her eyes and she said, I felt Uncle Kelly. I saw him for a second and he hugged me and then it was gone. And people are crying. She's crying in front of all these adults. And she said, this is real stuff, Papa, you know? And I go, what does it mean the most? I said, he said to me in a dream, we don't talk much, but he said, because I asked him in a dream, why was I born on your death day, Kelly? And he says, so I can see the world through your eyes.
Oh my God.
That is the best answer I have ever heard. I could, a guardian angel, reincarnation. I don't know what to apply to it. I don't know, but Kelly knows. And Kelly just, so I'm not, I still don't understand it. I just know they have a wonderful relationship. Because we used to say, I had a son, his name was Kelly. Now it's, no, I have a son, his name is Kelly. We're not grieving 100% because he's not gone 100%, because he's still an active part of our family.
So I just have to get this right. He was reincarnated as your granddaughter or your grandson?
My granddaughter.
That's so interesting that he came back as a little girl.
Little girl, yes. And I think even a member of the psychic says he may have some identification issues when he gets older or something, oh my gosh, she's so, like Kelly in so many ways, but yet she has this little buddy, his boyfriend that is her buddy. You know, and like Kelly, it's like Kelly having a buddy. Then she got a cat, looks just like the cat that we had, you know, that Kelly had. And it's just so, but yet I don't even know how to explain reincarnation. Or I even think I read a book years ago by Jane Roberts, like splinter souls, that maybe souls can be splintered up, that maybe they're, I just don't know. I know I'll know someday.
I can tell you that there are energetic healers on the site who I've interviewed who actually work with souls who are sometimes a soul can be two souls can be in a body or whatever, and they work with that. I could give you the name of someone. We have some wonderful people I've interviewed who are amazing in that way and could give you a lot of enlightenment about a lot of information about that. That's another conversation. You know, Mitch, is there anything special? You've been talking about the book, which is such a well-known book, and you're creating another book after it. But for our people, our listeners who might want to purchase your book or listen to your book or whatever, calling it Letters to My Son, Turning Loss to Legacy, is there anything you'd like them to know? Why should someone who's grieving, how's that going to help someone to pick up your book? And to read your book, to give them comfort.
Give them comfort and also hope. When you validate that the dead is not gone, and it just opens doors for people, like looking for signs. You know, a lot of people go see psychics, or some people don't even want to. But just being aware of the communication that can happen, finding signs, you know, like the cornstalk growing, or the butterfly, or the cardinal. My God, the cardinal is, I've heard.
Tell us about the cardinal.
Huh?
Tell us about the cardinal.
Oh, the cardinal. I mean, I've heard thousands of stories, you know, about cardinals. And recently a friend of mine's wife from high school just died of, and he wasn't really on board with this stuff. He's pretty, you know, right-wing Christian, and I just don't know if I believe that stuff, you know. But he said a cardinal appeared the day before she died, and he didn't think anything of it. But then after she died, his mother-in-law came over to visit, and this cardinal came up and flew in front of the window. And he goes, I think that's the same cardinal. And she goes, well, of course it is. It's Laurie, you know. And the mom said, and he goes, what did cardinal? I said, I've heard so many cardinal stories, redbird stories. And cardo, if you look up cardinal, it comes from cardo, which is Latin for hinge. It is like the door to heaven. It's like they call the cardinals in the Catholic Church because they guard the church and they guard the gate to heaven in a way. So it's always been a kind of an opening of door, or it's called a gate in some translations. But so that it's an automatic thing for birds. And then once, and more people know about it. So once they know that you know that they know what to do and what to send. And more people are aware of cardinals. They're easy. Monarchs are easy to send. And in fact, I even to ask to be specific sometimes. I mean, it's afraid to be specific. But I asked a friend, I was doing a workshop, and I said, you try to be specific. Like I asked for a cornstalk. You know, corn. I didn't ask for a cornstalk. I asked for something growing in their yard. That could have been anything. It was the cornstalk.
So let me ask you, so there are people who will say to you, I don't get any messages. I keep wanting him to show up in my dreams. I keep wanting to hear from him. I keep wanting this. Nothing's happening. What would you advise these people who are looking for signs and they're claiming they're not getting them?
I say to be more open, more aware, and I mean, as much as I say, I'm saying two things at the same time about being specific, and there's a story that goes with that, but also sometimes-
and I'm gonna ask you for that story about being specific in a minute, go ahead.
But don't be so narrow to say, you know, I saw a woman once, she's looking for 11. She gets 11 number, a number of people, a lot of people get numbers, you know, and she got 11 a lot. And she was looking for a dime and a penny, you know, because she's found them and she's really needed. And she goes, I'm looking for a dime and a penny. And there's this butterfly circling around her head. She goes, how come I never get a sign? How come I never get a sign? I'm looking for my sign. And I go, there's a butterfly flying above your head. And don't be so caught up in what you want. Allow what's available and let them send. And
the more they're working hard to get that through to you. I tell people, hard. You think it's easy to lower their vibration to get to us?
Yeah, so tell people about that you want signs, because sometimes they'll go to someone else who's more intuitive. That when I talk about being an intuitive, sometimes they can connect with those people. If those people know that you want signs, they're not going to come and tell you, because I don't want to bring them down and talk about their dead kid. I mean, that's what people will talk and say, oh, I'm not going to say I had a dream about them. But if they know that you want those kind of signs, then they can open up and say, oh my God, I had a dream about Kelly. I can't wait to tell you. And it's wonderful. So it's letting all the doors open. There's so many gazillion ways signs can come, and intuitions and voices. And, right. You know,
I think sometimes you have to let go of your control issues and just let it go and just say, okay, show me what you want. Let me know. What is the symbolism of, now you've told us about the cardinal, what is the symbolism of the butterfly? I know it's a chance for transformation, but that you often hear that signs come in the form of butterflies and dragonflies. Do you know why that is?
Yes, because, well, energy is energy. It's only transformed. Energy never dies. And so it just transformed into something else. You know, when you think about the butterfly, it's got a brain the size of a pin, you know, I mean, it does, but yet it's happened to so many people. And so since I know this, and my son, my cousin's son, 3 years ago, only 5 years ago now, her son Luke died of suicide. Young man, had some issues, whatever, but he was a real loner, introvert, had his woods he lived in most of the time. He chose to end his life. And I couldn't make it up there for the funeral. I was speaking out of town because she lived in a town called Now Then. Strange name, but she lived in Now Then, and 2 hours away. And I said, okay, I went up there about a month after he died, and I said, I couldn't make the funeral, but I'd like to see Luke's woods, because they put a sign up, Luke's woods in the back, and where he lived, and his deer stand, and, you know, all this, where he had fun. And so we went through the walk through the woods, and I said, do you ever get any signs? Because sometimes when you're walking and talking, you kind of grief from the edges, you know, you don't talk about, well, how you're doing your grief. You talk about butterflies, you talk about other things that allows them to bring in what's necessary for their heart to come out. And so I'm just saying, I just said, do you ever get any signs? She goes, oh my God, monarchs all the time. I said, of course, they're not unheard of. A lot of people get monarchs and they're available, you know, not in the wintertime, but they're wonderful. And I talked about that and we didn't see a butterfly while we're walking around. But when we were going home, I said, oh, I can't wait to get home because we lived on the farm and my wife had brought in a milkweed plant and it had a whole bunch of tiny, tiny caterpillars on it. And pretty soon in the corner, we had a hibiscus plant in the corner. We had like a dozen chrysalises hanging in our house. And every time I'd see an empty little chrysalis, we'd see the butterfly somewhere, we'd let it out. But I've never seen one actually coming out of the chrysalis. And I had one left hanging there. It was before I left the house. It was black. You could see the orange. You know, it was just ready to come. I said, oh, I gotta go see Luke. And so and it would go up there, rushing back. I said, I want to get back. I want to see my butterfly. So I get home and it just fallen on the floor. It was still wet wings. And I said, okay. So I picked him up with a piece of paper and put him out on the deck. And I, when Luke was small, I used to always say, Luke, use the force, you know, but it was all Star Wars. And so this butterfly is laying there drying his wings. And I said, your mom said butterfly. So Luke, use the force. And you crawl up on my foot, crawl up my leg, and you crawl on my, land on my shoulder. Within seconds, that butterfly crawled on my Converse tennis shoes, crawled up my pant leg, all the way up, landed on my shoulder, and another butterfly came around and landed right next to it.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, someone said, well, oh, I couldn't goodness. Do. And someone, how can you train a butterfly? I said, that's the key, you can't.
You can't.
Know, this is spirit. And I was wearing a shirt. That's when you asked me about the sign, specific signs. And I was wearing a shirt that said, it's all about love and penguins. And someone told me, well, that other butterfly must have been Kelly validating, you know, that you would help Luke. And I said, no, Betty, Kelly doesn't really send butterflies, you know. So I don't think it's Kelly. I think it's Raymond. And they go, who's Raymond? Well, I'm wearing this Raymond shirt. It's all about love and penguins. And when I was in Texas, I was doing a workshop and I said, try to be specific, but don't ask for penguins in Texas. You know, and this guy stood up and he goes, my son loved penguins. And we have a penguin in Texas at the Texas Zoo that we named Ramona. We adopted it.
Oh my gosh.
In honor of him. So don't tell me there's no penguins in Texas. So we laughed about that. And I said, well, you know what I meant? You know, don't ask for a mosquito in Alaska, you know, whatever. But now for 5 years, they've been getting people from all over the country. They had to build a big hutch on their wall. Hundreds of penguin things from people around when the anniversary comes up or his birthday comes up, not a card or a consolation card 5 years later, but a penguin. My granddaughter did a portrait of a penguin and sent it to them in Texas. It's one of their most cherished things. And she goes, it's for Uncle Raymond. He's Kelly's friend. You know, so it is so, I get goosebumps because we're keeping them so present that this generation, that my grandchildren are just, this is so part of life. It's so natural. It's not boogie woogie. It's not out of the park. It's just is.
It is. That is wonderful. Tell me what a grief nutritionist is. I know you're a grief educator, a writer, an author. What's a grief nutritionist? And how does that help the grieving process, Mitch?
Well, I learned in my 30 years of processing and talking and with people and, you know, and doing the grief process. And I'm talking about, I eventually got to the, what I call proactive grieving, which is grieving body, mind, soul, and spirit. All four distinct characteristics of the grief journey. And so to identify that each one of those is equally important and valid to, they need to be balanced, have equilibrium. And so I use the illustration of a car. Our body's like the car. It's the vehicle to get us from one place to the next. Then we have the engine and that's our body. Then we have the engine in the car with the blinkers and a computer system that operates the car. And that's our brain. That's our mind that operates this car. And then we have the energy. The gasoline that we put in the car is the energy from God, the spirit that enlivens, that animates the vehicle. And then we have soul. Who's driving the car? And that's where our emotional seat is. And that's where emotion comes from, our choices. We're the choice makers. If we listen to God's spirit, we listen to body who's telling us all the time, and we listen to, you know, mind, which we usually vibrate from mind because we think we're smart enough, good enough, and God damn it, I can get, sorry, God darn it, I can get through.
Right, on this podcast, you can say that. It's okay.
So, you know, yeah, that, and so we're conflicted by being in brain. And so then we're in cognitive dissonance psychologically because we've got holding two ideas at the same time, but realizing, no, we can hold three. We can hold, get the input and make that decision. And so that, I think, really helps people to move forward knowing that, but I did all those three aspects, but I didn't do body. I was traveling. I was trained. I was working with Alan Peterson across the country in a van, eating late night pizza. And, you know, I got to 230 pounds, you know, and that's not my frame. And I said, you know, I'm not taking care of body. So I went on a my own type of intuition diet, not diet, but more of a practice. You know, it's all my, what we do, not so much the diet, but you know, the routines that we do. And I found out I'm a Winnie Pooh. In my grief thing, I'm a Winnie Pooh. So Winnie's like their, you know, we like to have our routines. And so I changed the routine. So I went to all, you know, probiotics. I'm making sauerkraut today. I'm at kefir. I've got 100-year-old sourdough. So I make all my own food now that I'm retired. It's easier.
Wait. With all the things that you do, you take time and you make all of your own food?
Well, not all of my nutritional food, the probiotics food, the living food, like fermented the pickles like you get in 100 years ago,
right,
in a pickle barrel, you know, and right, they're full of good stuff. Kvass is like a beet tonic that you, and I chose, so I've been in all that stuff. I went off all my medication, blood pressure, cholesterol, the acid reflux, I was on Prilosec, I was on all those things. Went off them completely, and I went from 230 pounds down to 178. I came back and balanced out. But I said, now I'm taking care of my body. And we need to get vitamin D from the sun in our grief. If we don't get enough vitamin D, the only vitamin D we get is from the sun, unless we're from our diet. But if we eat enough salmon to get enough vitamin D, we'll have mercury poisoning. So you need to get out in the sun and get some sun. We need to drink eight ounce glasses of water every day. If we're hypoxic, and then we can be more depressed, more prone to depression if we're hypoxic, if we're not breathing, because we're breathing intercostally. We got our shoulders almost touching because we want to go in the fetal position because we're grieving. We say, no, like my dad said, stand up, shoulders back, chest out, stomach in. Let your diaphragm breathe, and then you have good air, you have good water, and go for a walk. Walk does stimulates EMDR, that bilateral stimulation. So you're walking, you're breathing, and you're drinking water. So going for a walk, you get thirsty, you drink water, you breathe better, and you're doing bilateral stimulation. So there's so many things you can do physically because we grieve body, mind, soul, and spirit. The foundational thing, the first thing that happens when we grieve is our body reacts with hormones, with cortisol. And so we want to balance the cortisol with the oxytocin, the, you know, watch a Hallmark movie and buy a puppy and, you know, be around kids and stuff to counteract all that cortisol, which will kill us eventually and damage us interior.
So someone comes to you and you're a grief educator and they are so upset. They just lost someone so near and dear to them. Do you give them advice, like work with them about how to work through their grief from a body, mind, soul, and spirit aspect? Will you actually work with them with diets and suggest things to do? Or you refer to them to other people who can work with them that way? How does that work?
I'll do kind of a light primer, especially with somebody early in their loss. But now Zoom is changing things too, because with the Zooms I've done, some people are 3 weeks out and they're joining us. And so you have to kind of, as an instructor, we go, okay, I can't be as cavalier as I'm talking with someone who's 3 weeks out and someone who's 3 years out. I mean, there's a difference.
We have to cater
to our audience. And so I tell people, yes, body, mind, soul, and spirit. Try to tap into those. You can sit on a three-legged stool or a four-legged stool, but a four-legged stool is much more sturdy. You can live without spirit. You can say, identify, I don't believe, like my mother. But she was a really an angry person her whole life. She got through things, but she didn't go through things with joy, and we need joy, and she never captured joy again because she did not embrace the spirit side. And so you can function. We're a mammal. We can function like a mammal, But we are his spirit. That makes what makes us special, you know?
That makes sense. Now, what is this thing about, like, you're an intuit, and people don't know what that is. So you want to share how this ability helps you to help people?
Yeah, so intuit is just basically being sensitive, is what people used to call, you know, that. So whether you don't know you're a psychic or you're a channeler, or, you know, why do you get these poems or why do you get stuff, you know? And I knew a long time ago, I just thought I'd just get ideas. I'm a writer, you know, I like to write poems, and I didn't know where they came from, you know, but to recognize that you aren't into it, or the people that you come around. And as you get more sensitive and more in tune with your grieving body, mind, soul, and spirit, you set up a frequency. You start to recognize other people that are helpers, and you gravitate to them without even knowing. You just gravitate to gravity. Like energy attracts to like energy. So if you vibrate at a higher vibration, you're going to vibrate with other people, and then you're not going to have the lower vibrations pulling you down, which can tend to do that, because sometimes we tend to hang into those lower vibration levels when we're, you know, feeding our mammal side and our pain, and we eat chocolate chips and drink beer all night, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I have found that to be so true. And what is the difference, Mitch, between passive grieving and proactive grieving?
Proactive grief is what I talk about, like, you know, embracing it, being the CEO of your grief, that it is your journey. Everybody's journey is different. Every circumstance is different. Every accumulative loss is different. Every non-ever experiencing loss or support system or parents, or I mean, it's just so much difference that it's just saying, no, this is my journey and I'll do what works for me, not to let someone should on you and say, oh, this is where you should be by now, or you should be doing this. And no, you don't have to. Do what works for you. There's no rush. It's the rest of your life to get it. And eventually you're going to have to go through things. So if you short step them or take a shortcut, you're just going to go back around and do it again. And I didn't want to do that. You know, and I don't think people do either. They want to move forward. And using semantics.
Some people don't, though. Don't you think, Mitch, some people want to stay in the drama of that they had this loss and this is where they stayed for their whole life?
I am sorry to say, but because of all the hundreds of thousands of people that I met and talked to, some people never had a great drama story to talk about. So this is their whole life now, the drama, and they don't want to don't take my grief away. It's my identity now. I never had one before. Now I have one, so don't take it away from me, you know? And so, but I've seen some of those.
You call that passive grieving? Would you say that is passive grieving?
No, I guess that's somewhere in between. Passive grieving is, I think, is just more like delayed grieving or putting it off grieving. It's just like, okay, I'm grieving, I'm doing what I'm supposed to, but I'm really not going beyond the pale. I'm not doing anything that is just not in the books, you know, to embrace what is, to grieve outside the box, not just accept, okay, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is set. If you're following the seven stages of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, you're probably a passive griever. Because those new don't resonate with me, you know, and I came up with a whole new process of instead of those steps, I call it STAIRS, and that's another whole acronym of surviving loss.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well,
STAIRS, like STAIRS.
Yes, with period behind. It's an acronym. I like mnemonics. It can stick in your head longer. And so stairs is, it's also, I thought about it one day when I was going up the stairs, you know, and nothing is physically wrong. I was at work and going to the top of the staircase, and I was, you know, 40 years old. I go, why am I so damn tired? You know, and I said, God, like when you're grieving, gravity seems to increase tenfold. And I said, I'm just so tired. I'm just so heavy all the time. And I said, grief is just like going up a staircase. And I go, wow, it really is. And so I came up with the S. The first one is shock. The first step is shock. You unilaterally, we go physically into shock, which protects us. If we didn't have shock, we'd go mad. So our body with hormones puts us into shock so we can bury our loved one. We can do all the things we're supposed to do. And so we are in shock. And that can last for weeks to months. So that's shock. And then you go up the stairs because Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's, we're for the dying, not for the grief-stricken. And so I went through those when my son was dying. Oh, yeah, denial, anger, bargaining, all the way up. But that was a stage. And a stage is like a linear progression that one has to be completed before you can build on the next. And that's not how grief works. It's it can be all over the map.
Absolutely.
So a stairs is just like, okay, you got to climb the stairs today. Yes, we do. Every day we got to get up and climb the stairs. So we get up, the first step is shock. We get to that. The second one is the T is trauma. So when the body trauma or the shock wears off, then we enter into full-blown trauma. The loss becomes real. It's devastating. We're paying all the time. The shock is worn off. No cards are coming. No casseroles are coming. No one mentions their name. And so we're going into this whole, just the impact is, it becomes very, very real. So then we're living in the trauma. I said, now what? I'm in this trauma. What do I do? I got to accept this. And people say, I don't have to accept this. I don't want to accept this. You don't accept the loss. Accept the challenge to survive. You are their voice. You're going to be there. We are going to be the legacy for them. That's where I talk learning into legacy. We become the legacy. So when we accept that they have died, we accept the challenge to create a legacy for them. It turns our life around. So then we have the ST, the acceptance. Then we go to I, which is the insight, introspection, intuition. We go inside and feel all these voices and all this stuff, and I go, oh my God, we have talents. I didn't know I could do this. I didn't know I could do that. I didn't know I could write. I didn't know I could be on TV. I didn't know I could stand in front of a podium. I didn't know any of these things. But once I accepted it, then I saw that I have some abilities and I have some deficits. And they're like, well, what do I do with my deficits? So then we ask people to come into our fold and we help them. And that's when we go up to the R, which is the reconstruction and rebuilding period, the renaissance. People say, you're the renaissance guy. Well, yeah, I turned into a renaissance man after my son died, because it was a whole rebirth in my life. And so I went to the R and I started rebuilding my whole life. When you rebuild your life and have a renaissance, then you can get to the serenity, the S on the stairs, and you have peace and you have serenity. And at some moment, you'll wake up at the bottom of the damn stair again, and you go, oh God. But you can sprint them up because you've been up the stairs now. You know them, and you can stay at the bottom for a while and say, I want to have a pity party today. Nothing wrong with sitting in melancholy. Melancholy is underrated. I love melancholy. It brings my son back in ways that nothing else can. You know, I love sitting in both the space of pain and joy at the same time. And that's what I call melancholy, sweet sorrow. And we can experience that. We just identify that it's the rest of our life. You know, that we can walk with our grief. We don't have to put it behind me or put a cloak over it. You know, we just walk with it.
That's lovely. I'm writing that down. We can walk with our grief. We don't have to put a cloak over it. That's great. I want to preserve that. How can our listeners?
I never said that before, anyway. Mark McKelly must have been.
Oh, my goodness.
But I was thinking the pictures. You all put the black, you know, thing over the pictures.
Yeah.
And the, put a black cloak over it. And
wow. Mitch, everyone wants to contact you now. Tell us all the ways. Tell everyone all the ways they can get a hold of you.
Well, my website is heartlightstudios.com.
You want to spell that?
Heartlightstudios.net. They're both. Yep.
How do you spell that?
It's just like I have to tell everybody in my email, too. It's HEARTLIGHTSTUDIOS. And that Gmail is my, and I welcome any emails from anybody. So,
and by the way, meeting Mitch, everyone, definitely Heart Mitch. Matt, it fits very much so.
But, well, my son, where do you want to go? He wanted to go to Hawaii. He wanted to meet Pee Wee Herman. And he wanted to meet E.T. We got to meet E.T. at the set, and he got to ride on E.T.'s bike. And I have a video of it. I put it on YouTube. He's riding on E.T.'s bike, and they ask him, so Kelly, what's your favorite movie? He goes, Rambo. He's on the E.T. set. I love that. One of my favorite clips that I still have of him. It's Heart Life Studios, and I have Mitch Carmody Facebook,
but also Carmody, everyone.
Carmody. And then if you go to YouTube, Mitch Carmody, I have hundreds of videos that on the grieving process, interviews, and a lot of my radio shows, interviews. I had people, I put a video on afterward to more kind of animate the podcast sort of thing. And so there's a lot of stuff, you know, online and WordPress, Mitch Carmody WordPress is all my blogs.
And what is, and then it's just your thoughts that you share with people, the Mitch Carmody.
Yeah, it's a proactive grieving blog. So I talk about, you know, the different stories with my son, or like I'm writing, I just blogged out the first prologue of my new book, Letters to My Dad Going Condo. And it's Kelly talking and introducing himself, and he's writing this book, and because he wants to tell the whole perspective of the death experience from his perspective. My first two books were about his death and our grief. He's talking about his death and his relief that he left that horrible body that was just decaying, and he found his dog again. His dog was licking him, and he's just talking about how wonderful heaven can be, and it's not that far away.
No, it's not. It's all around us. And it's, but you said, just said, it's wonderful for people to know our pets do go to the other side. Animals are on the other side, all of that. Mitch, tell us your tip for finding joy in life. You've got to have a good one. Maybe a good one or two or three.
Well, you know, it sounds pretty prosaic, and I mean, Saint Francis of Assisi prayer. It's a Catholic prayer, but I say it. I've been saying it every single night for 30 years since my son died, because it make me an instrument of your peace. It's the last thing, Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. And I don't read the whole thing, but I mean, I read it in my prayer. But that's what I'm saying is, say that to your Godhead, to your power, and say, make me an instrument of your peace. When that happens, the joy will, can't help but come in. I was joyless. And I'm telling people early on too, don't, you know, we hang on to hope. We got to have hope. But if you're feeling hopeless, that's okay. There's no hope in those early months sometimes. Just let yourself be hopeless. You're not, you know, this is the time to be hopeless. And no, and then you're going to get hope as it comes along. It comes in a baby's feet. You know, you just come in little bit by little bit, and you can have the hope again. But by serving others, helping others on their journey, I said, when Kelly died, my wife came, or this is a couple months after he died, and my wife came, she said, my God, what, Mitch, what happened to you? Why you're smiling? I didn't notice I was smiling. But when you're grieving in the early year, I mean, you're that shock and ashen face all the time. And she goes, I haven't seen you smile like that since Kelly died. I said, well, I went and gave blood today. And they said it was going for a little boy that had leukemia. You know, I said, wow, that felt so good. So I said, I got to go give blood. I can. And they said, well, you can't every 6 weeks. And I said, no, this is my mojo. I need to give blood. They said, well, you can give through apheresis. You'll take it in one arm, spin out the good stuff, put the other stuff back, and you can do that once a week. I said, well, sign me up. So since my son died, I've been doing it at least once a month, sometimes every 2 weeks.
You give blood since your son died every 2 weeks or so?
Every month. But unless sometimes I've had a cold or whatever, or I can't, or if my blood pressure got up for a while and I couldn't until I got my weight down, then because I couldn't give blood for a while, which irritated me too. So when I lost my weight, then I could give blood again without the blood pressure being too high. And so I just got a backpack I got with a thermos in it, Red Cross, for my 50th gallon. So I've donated 50 gallons in my son's name. Every time I said, this is for my son. And they said, you know that your son has helped to save 1,500 lives from 50 gallons of blood? And so that is what brings you back, is knowing that you can be a servant of God's, of your child, of your loved one. Just, you know, they can be your guardian angel. They can be your megaphone to God or whatever, but their connection how awful if we would waste that connection, you know? And that's what I want to tell people, that it is there. You can find it, you know, don't poo-poo it. Just allow it. You're going to feel it, because 90%, you know, you've all the people you've worked with, we know it's a real thing. You know, we can't, it might be proven. You can't even prove anything in space. I mean, it's all speculation. So love it, enjoy it, and just reach out to other people. And they've proven the studies that people that practice kindness get better benefits than the person they're giving it to. And there's a difference between kindness and being nice. You know, being nice is just, sometimes being nice is a worse thing. You can be too nice to somebody not to hurt their feelings, when, you know, you gotta be, maybe just be more blunt about something and be transparent. And that's being kind. And so it's just being kind and helping others is
That's a big, that's really important. There's a difference between being kind and being nice.
Yes, it really is. If you really look at it, oh, why don't you be nice, or be nice to a kid, but being kind, being nice is an adjective. Kindness is a verb. It's an action verb. You know, when you're being kind, you are doing action. You're loving action. When you're being nice, you're just being polite, you know, and that's the difference.
That's a perfect word. That is so appropriate for you and me, because when they pulled me out of the car, when my husband was dead next to me, I got the message. A voice came into my head and said, be loving and kind to everyone.
Yes, when you first said that, I couldn't wait to kind of seal that off. And you said, what is your greatest joy? Finding joy is practicing kindness. Bring
practicing
on.
Kindness. Look at all the good kindness.
Practicing kindness.
That's absolutely true. I don't want this interview to end, but I need to call it a day. And you, everyone listening to us, will have to look forward to other times I'm going to be chatting with Mitch, because we're going to want to find out about his new book and so many other things that he's doing. And I personally want to thank you, Mitch, for this wonderful interview and helping so many people to navigate the uncharted territory of death, dying, and the bereavement process. Sir, you are truly a blessing. And thank you also for joining me today on this wonderful interview on Grief and Rebirth Podcast. And here's a reminder, everyone, that you can see the show notes and all Grief and Rebirth Podcast episodes on IreneWeinberg.com. And make sure to follow us and like us. We know you like us on social at Irene S. Weinberg on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. As I always like to say, to be continued, many blessings. And bye for now.